This is the Popmatic Podcast for June 25th, 2014. Why? Independence. Because America.
That almost made sense.
Did that make sense?
Almost.
There's a lot of debate if that made sense or not.
A lot of good words there.
Why? Independence. Because America. That makes sense to me.
It was better the second time.
The Popmatic Podcast is where you can rock out with your library card out. I mean, come on, people. You can check out 100 items. There's no need to be frugal. Just go crazy. I'm Brian, and joining me this week are...
Crystal.
Mike.
Bill.
Amanda.
Why independence? Because America indeed. This is our 4th of July episode, or at least the last episode that we'll post before the 4th of July.
That's close.
Then we're going to take a week off, and we're going to come back with an episode about what we cooked on the grill during 4th of July, or maybe something like that. We kind of fudge it. We always do that. So this is the 4th of July episode where we celebrate American independence, our free spirit, our entrepreneurial drive, our willingness to get her done, even when the powers that be say, no, you don't get done, son. You don't get done. But we did get done. We got her done. No matter what the powers that be say. So in this episode, we're going to feature our favorite independent authors, musicians, filmmakers, our favorite people that make big stuff with a little bit of money, who don't need big money to make big stuff. We appreciate the little guy, the rule breakers, the trailblazers, the independents. Happy 4th of July. So Mike...
Well, I thought I would talk today about a small independent press from Michigan called the Subterranean Press that makes special editions of books that already exist or publishes new books in snazzy hardcover editions with a cool ribbon or are autographed by the author or, you know, are in a slip case or, you know, with the special Japanese tissue paper, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And it, prices range from a mere $40 to, I saw something on there, it was like, I believe it was $695 for a book.
Wow.
you know, but...
It's made of gold.
Yeah, seriously, like, what, you know, what kind of leather are they... Ooh, what kind of leather is it bound in? Interesting. Ooh. Anywho, since I'm net made of money, I like to focus on some particular authors that I'm really into, like Tim Powers or Harlan Ellison, or, you know, it is very, like, you know, high class, top shelf. We got some books from them, like Muse of Fire from Dan Simmons. But I thought I would focus on, they're coming out with a special limited and lettered editions of the Wool Trilogy by Hugh Howey, which also dovetails into our indie, free-spirited, do-it-yourself episode. Howie published a series of novellas starting in 2011 on Amazon's, and I didn't write down what kind of Amazon service it is.
Create Space is what it used to be called.
Yeah, but there's like an ebook division, something self-start, something self. Anywho.
Listen, we're libraries. Do we like Amazon?
Yeah, we like them about as much as Hachette does. Release them in a omnibus edition. And all these sold so well that Simon & Schuster came in and offered him bags of money. And they released it. And then now it's being optioned as a motion picture from 20th Century Fox and or Lionsgate. Wool, the first novel, is set in a post-apocalyptic, you know, radiated hellscape thing. But the cool thing this time is that, like, for once, I mean, you know, it's not, it doesn't involve zombies or, you know, a disease or any of that. It's the old school radioactive thing. And it's set in a silo underground. It's like it's almost like an inverted skyscraper. Each level has a different specialty, like...
Hell? Like the
yeah,
Inferno?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Subterranean.
Except for, like, you know, gluttony. But instead of, like, you know, horrible stuff like avarice or gluttony, each level has, like, you know, software development, engineering, child rearing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
The bottom.
That's right. Mwah, mwah, mwah. And the top level is devoted to law enforcement, of all things. The sheriff lives up on the top level where there's a window that he can see the outside.
Panopticon.
The first novella is about the sheriff starts to believe that his wife was murdered and starts to, you know, unravel a conspiracy. And it's pretty neat, too, because each of the novellas kind of ends in a, like a cliffhanger-y kind of thing. So I think that's part of the reason why it sold so well, because every, you know, it's like, got to read the next one. Anyway, but The Will is the first book, and the second book is Shift, and the last book is called Dust. I've only read the first one. The first one's really good. One of these days I need to get Shift. And Subterranean also publishes, last year I also mentioned Bridge of Birds, which I really liked, and they released a hardcover edition of the complete series and an ebook as well. So that's about it for me. How about you, Brian?
All right. I also wanted to talk about some independent publishers, like some small presses. So people often ask me, how do I find like certain kinds of books or certain types of books? And in the library catalog. And one of the things you can do is you can just do a search for the publisher. Just put like the publisher's name in quotes in the search box and you'll get most of the books. So unless we've had the book for a really long time, Mike can confirm this, like the publisher's name will be in the cataloging record and we'll get all the books from that publisher. So that's how you can do, you can search for all the publishers that I'm going to tell you about. I'm going to do three, but I'm going to move really fast. And the library has a lot of books by all these publishers. And we have a lot of books by Subterranean too, for a press that puts out like, you know, small edition, deluxe editions. We have a lot of the Subterranean.
Yeah, every time we get one, I'm like, wow, we have it. Because there's only 200 printed or something.
The Subterranean is very beautiful. And the National Public Library is awesome. So, but some of the other small presses that we have. First, Akashic Books. And they describe themselves as a independent company dedicated to publishing urban literary fiction and political nonfiction by authors who are either ignored by the mainstream or who have no interest in working within the ever-consolidating ranks of the major corporate publishers. Cha-ching, you sold me. Now, that being said, they have had some major hits. Go the F to Sleep. They put out the Simon's Cat books. But lately, they've actually been putting out the other thing that has been very popular at the library is the geographically specific city noir series. Or country noir series like Portland noir, Brooklyn noir.
That Boston noir.
Yeah, Haiti noir is on
there. Yeah, noir.
Yeah, and they do the greatest hits of that. So that's them. They put that out. And you know what they've done too in recent years is they've actually turned to like urban fiction that's usually marketed towards, mostly towards like African American consumer base. They've picked out some of those authors who do like some really good like hardboiled crime fiction and put out under their press. The one thing that of theirs that I've written about on the Off the Shelf blog before is the Punk Planet, the Collected Interviews, which is an awesome book. Go check that out. So the second press is Grey Wolf Press. So Grey Wolf Press describes themselves as a leading independent publisher committed to discovery and energetic publication of contemporary international literature. We champion outstanding writers at all stages of their careers to ensure that diverse voices can be heard in a crowded marketplace. We believe that books nourish the individual spirit and enrich the broader culture and must be supported by attentive editing, superior design, and creative promotion. You sold me. I love it. It's great. Seems to be what the library is all about. So some hits that you might have heard of, they put out otherwise known as The Human Condition, the greatest hits essays by Jeff Dyer, who's one of the best essayists around today. All of the Percival Everett novels, if you're into him, if you know him, you might know him from his novel Erasure. And then the book, one of the books that I've written about, or at least mentioned on the off-the-shelf blog before, is Red Plenty by Francis Spufford, which was a satire about Soviet economic planners. Right up my alley.
Whoa, that's some bedside reading there.
Yeah. So lastly, the Dalkey Archive. So it specializes in the publication or republication of lesser-known, often avant-garde works. The press is named for the novel The Dalkey Archive by the Irish author Flann O'Brien. So it's mostly modernist, postmodernist fiction. In this case, when I think about the Dalkey Archive, what they normally do is they take like forgotten gems or semi-forgotten gems, especially stuff like non-English, non-American stuff, and they republish it in these really nice editions. So some of the stuff that we have by them, a lot of Aldous Huxley of the reissues we have is from the Dalkey Archive. Also, the Djuna Barnes, a lot of that is from the Dalkey Archive. And one of their books that I've written about on the off-the-shelf blog is Juice by Ishmael Reed. And that's actually a contemporary novel by Ishmael Reed about one aging middle-aged man who's sort of like the patriarch and the man and his family who is defending O.J. Simpson, but then slowly the whole world starts to turn against O.J. Simpson, and then he's alienated. That was a great book, Juice by Ishmael Reed. And those are three. Those are three. What were their names, guys? Come on, you guys remember, right?
Akashic.
Oh, that's so good.
Close?
I was just kidding. You actually remember.
I remember.
Grey Wolf?
Grey Wolf, yes.
Yeah, Akashic Books, Grey Wolf Press, and the Dalkey Archive. Check them out. And what, Mike, you had talked about?
Subterranean Press.
That's awesome. Now, Amanda.
So, I'm going to
stay independent, but I'm going to shift it in from publishing to music publishing. So I have played I'm a piano player, for those of you that don't know, and I have played this particular artist for almost 15 years. I found his first book by accident. I was just browsing through Lifeway, and he had a book called Solitude that had a piece that was Joyful, Joyful, which is like Beethoven's ninth, and interposed with Yea, Sweet Joy of Man's Desire, which is Bach. And it was just, I've never seen those two put together before, so I'm like, I have to have this book. And so I was in college, and I was down in Nashville visiting my brother, who was down here in college, and I was still in Indiana at this point. And so I got this book and took it back and just kind of fell in love with his arrangements and his styles. And it was by, his name is Jay Rouse, R-O-U-S-E, for those of you who are curious. And unfortunately, Nashville Public Library does not have any of his printed piano music. Now, I can try to get some for you through interlibrary loan, should you decide that this is something you want to pursue. However, we do have one of his recordings called Worthy on Freegal that you can download. And I just happened to stumble across it one day, and I was like, no way, that's my Jay Rouse. I've never heard anybody else talk about him. So I couldn't believe it was the same guy, but I looked it up, and it is. So it's called Worthy. It has about 10 tracks of him playing. They did kind of overproduce it a little, and it kind of has the synthesizers with it, so you kind of have to get past that. But his arrangements are still good. I have not played the particular arrangements on this CD, but I have requested the book for myself, so hopefully I can learn it. So Jay he started life as the pianist for the Gaither Vocal Band, which, don't hold that against him, he's a much better musician than that. But he's the vice president of production, or at least according to the website, that didn't seem to be the most up-to-date. But he was vice president of production for Praise Gathering Music Publishing, which is his publisher. So he's got several different, I think he's got about 10 to 12 books that he's put out of solo piano arrangements of church music. And like Solitude would be one you could look into, Worthy to match the CD and then, or the downloads. And then the other one is a newer one called Oasis that I seem to play all the time, that everybody at church loves. I always get compliments on when I play. So definitely check out Jay Rouse if this is something that you're interested in. The other fun fact is that I'm originally from Indiana, and Jay lives with his wife in Anderson, Indiana. So we are Hoosiers together, but it's ironic that I had to come to Nashville to meet a fellow Hoosier. So excellent solo piano arranger. All right, Mr. Bill, what you telling us about?
Well, I'm wanting to talk about independent characters created by writers. I'm mainly talking about the Gumshoe or the Private Eye. Now, it's not about the police procedural or the police who have codes and laws thrust upon them. The Private Eye has his own code of honor. He has respect for the law, but the Private Eye can go into the cracks of the law and the Neverworld for the greater good. A private eye knows what's right and doesn't need anyone to tell him. I'm going to recommend three private eye novels. First up, Red Harvest by Dashiell Hammett. The character in Red Harvest is known as the Continental Op. He comes to Personville, which is also known as Poisonville, should give you an idea of the town. And all I'm going to say is, when he shows up, the bodies begin to drop. The second novel I want to recommend is Playmates by Robert B. Parker. In this Spencer adventure, Spencer investigates corruption in the world of college academia. And I've got to tell this, I was reading this book when I was a college student, and it was on spring break. And when I read this book, I think Robert Parker nails it. He absolutely nails the world of academia. It might be because he was also a teacher, a professor at one time. I met Robert Parker at a book signing, and I told him I was working on my degree when I read Playmates, and all he did was look up at me and wink, so it was just so cool. We had a moment there together. He knew what I was getting at and talking about. Finally, the last book is The Last Good Kiss by James Crumley. This story involves, and this is where I'm going to mispronounce the character's name, C.W. Shugrew, a Montana investigator. The basic story deals with Shugrew hired to hunt down an author. What I loved about this book was its sense of atmosphere. I'm not a drinker of alcohol, but after reading this book, I know what a hangover feels like. So the three books I'm reading is Red Harvest, Playmates, The Last Good Kiss, Summer Reading, So Enjoy.
So Crystal is going to go next.
Oh, God.
And the movie, she's going to talk about a film starring two pretty famous people and a well-established director. The film was produced by Castle Rock Entertainment, which is a subsidiary of Warner Brothers Pictures, and it was distributed by Sony Pictures Incorporated. You may have heard of them. So the budget on the movie was $3 million, which...
That's kind of chump change, though, for you know...
That is chump change for Warner Brothers. By most independent standards, by most independent filmmakers who maybe are making a movie on the fly at Disneyland with just iPhones, like in the what was the name
Escape
of that?
Escape from Tomorrow.
Escape from Tomorrow. I think $3 million would be more money than they would know what to do with. That'd be enough money to cause a self-destruction lotto winner style. Like, but that is a humble amount of money. And the director...
Richard Linklater. Now I'm my tongue's tied. Richard Linklater.
Absolutely came up making movies independently on a shoestring budget, for sure. Like, he's one of the great success stories of American cinema. And I'm glad that he still actually gets to make movies. And the fact that he can make such good movies on such a relatively small or relatively large amount of money... is awesome.
Are you going to let Crystal talk? Yeah,
no, this is, this is
I'm going to talk for Crystal today.
This is the lawyer.
Yeah. You're not worthy of speech today.
This is the penalty she pays for choosing to talk about a completely mainstream, big budget movie on the independent show.
Maybe she's asserting her independence from us.
Oh, whoa. I like that.
There you go.
Yes.
Wow.
And in my defense, when this movie came out last year, 2013, it came to one theater in this town, and I think it was only there 1 week, two tops. So take that.
I went to the Bell Court. That's independent. Ish. Right.
So... Anyway, thank you for that introduction. I am going to talk about Before Midnight, the third film collaboration so far by director Richard Linklater, and stars and co-writers Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. But to talk about the third film, I have to mention the first two, and they are films that are kind of made outside the major Hollywood machine, sort of, kind of. So, anyway, here we go. In the first film, Before Sunrise, which premiered in 1995, American tourist Jesse and French student Celine meet on a train, and then they spend one beautiful night together in Vienna. And this film represents the energy and fearlessness of youth, armed with the naive idealism of fate and love. And in the second film, in 2004's Before Sunset, almost a decade has passed when Jesse and Celine run into each other in Paris. Although their careers are on track, he's a published author and she's an environmentalist, they've both experienced heartbreak and loss. So this film represents the aftermath of coming of age, complexities of finding your purpose in life, and ultimately the joy of second chances. Now, in last year's Before Midnight, another 10 years have passed, and we find Jesse and Celine on holiday in Greece with their twin girls. They are a blended family, although not legally married. Jesse's teenage son with his ex-wife has just left to go back to the States. There is no denying that they are in the throes of middle age now. Jesse looks weathered in the face. Celine's gained a few pounds. Their deep conversations still flow, but there's an underlying tone of frustration, resentment, a little boredom even in the familiarity of their partnership. This film really explores the struggles in a long-term relationship, sacrifice and compromise and disappointment. So will Jesse and Celine endure? I guess we'll have to wait another 10 years to see. I don't know what time frame will be the next film. We've already had Sunrise, Sunset, and Midnight.
High noon?
High noon, yes. Yeah. So, Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy.
These are vampire movies?
Yes.
No one sparkles in this movie.
No sparkling. Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy have brought so much to these characters. They kind of feel like old friends to me. Linklater allows his actors the cinematic space to let the story unfold. And you can really tell that this is a film made by artists who love the collaborative process, just like us podcasters, right? And
Bill told me to shut up. But I was picking on you.
That's right. But above all, you can tell they really love their art. So who would I recommend watch before midnight and even before sunrise and before sunset? Well, fans of movies set in exotic, faraway places, because we've got Vienna, Paris, and now Greece. People who enjoy romantic books and movies.
AKA girls.
And, of course, folks who like to support independent films, although this one's probably on the low end of independence.
Quote-unquote.
Right. So, yeah, there you have it.
I've watched the first two, and I enjoyed them. I mean, I just remember after the first one, watching it, I wanted to see, like, what they went back to. Like, when they were together for that one night, and then right. I wanted to see, like, what their lives were. So that was kind of nice when they did the second one. You got a little bit of a glimpse of that, mm-hmm. like, what real mm-hmm. life was like, mm-hmm. and then they came back to this magical fairyland of wherever they were. But I have not seen Midnight yet, so I need to.
So when you read critics' reviews about these movies, they talk about the Up documentary, which mm-hmm. maybe you all have watched.
I've heard of it.
And is Truffaut that has the series of films about the couple.
Oh, isn't Linklater coming out with a movie that's a similar thing? Where like
with a boy?
Yeah. That every year they film the same kid through teenager.
Right. So we can link up to the title of that in the show notes. I can't remember it all.
Boyhood.
Boyhood.
That's it, so, yeah.
The documentary series that you mentioned was the Up series, and they go back to...
7-Up.
Yeah, they mm-hmm. visit the same people every 7 years. Mm-hmm. And it started in the UK, and these people are kind of celebrities now in the UK because it's mm-hmm. been so popular. And I could be wrong with this, but I think Linklater said that this trilogy is done, and he's not going to make another one.
Oh, really?
And it has... And okay. I hope I'm not wrong about this. He considers it one work, and I don't want to give free advertising to another local independent nonprofit theater that we always give free advertising to, but they showed it all three films together at least once one weekend, you know, because like the idea mm-hmm. is that it's one piece. Alan Alda made a movie too, same time next year. Did you ever see that movie?
Yeah.
So it's about this couple. They hook up at this camp, and it starts when they're young. And then they're like a little bit older, and it ends with they hate each other because politically they've gone on different ends of the political mm-hmm. spectrum, and they just fight. Probably not as good as these three movies. Yeah, I doubt if the library has it.
How could we have mean Alan Alda? He's so nice.
You know, really, I've heard he's kind of.
I can't remember. I can't. Oh. I can't remember.
Oh,
I can't
interesting.
Remember, I can't remember the female actor like who played the other.
Ellen Burstyn.
Boom. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's Ellen Burstyn and Alan Alda. Except, awesome independent filmmaker Linklater actually did it for real. What? There's like, well, let's just film him and pretend. He actually did it like for real, actually, you know. So, Amanda.
Yes, Brian.
What's tickling your fancy this week?
I'm going to keep it in the independent vein because the guys I'm going to talk about are not signed anywhere. They're called the Bottle Boys, and this is five Danish gentlemen that got bored at a frat party and where there was no entertainment but a lot of empty beer bottles lying around, and so they thought, hey, let's put water in them and make music. So they did. And they've kind of become an internet somewhat of a sensation. I mean, they were on Britain's Got Talent, and Simon didn't like them, of course, because he's grumpy. But I was looking at their videos on YouTube, which I will have Brian link to the show notes, and the first one I watched was Under the Sea, which is from The Little Mermaid, and it was enjoyable. Now, I have to say, I don't know if anybody here has actually done this. Like, they made pop bottles that you could put, now you can't even hardly get pop bottles anymore, but I used to do this when I was little all the time, which I think is partially why this appeals to me so much, because I would make a huge mess on our kitchen counter, and you have to get them all tuned just right, and sometimes you could hit them with spoons, and sometimes you could blow across them, and I could entertain myself for hours with pop bottles. So anyway, they also have a mashup called Funky Dance that they actually have some kind of DJ guy with them that I did not recognize his name. He's probably Danish in some form. And they do like Axel F and You Can't Touch This. And yeah, it's like all the cheesy songs that you love that is in this. And when I first heard about them, they said that was because they did a Billie Jean remix, which I liked, but I didn't love. It's online as well. So I would check out these Bottle Boys. And if nothing else, they're cute. And they are on Facebook. They don't have a website yet, but they are on Facebook.
The reason I think Simon Cowell didn't like them is because he didn't think that they were cute. And I think that he's kind of like that.
Yeah.
I think if you look like a teenage girl that I think that he thinks
he
that he can.
He enjoys that.
Yes, he likes that a lot.
Yeah, they don't look like teens.
Yeah. If they're like dudes who are like not to his proclivities, I don't know, yeah. Right? He's like, whatever.
Well, his other three co-judges, who I don't watch Britain's Got Talent, I have no idea who these people are, but they liked it. So he kind of hated them for liking it too, so that made me feel better. But anyway, Bottle Boys, check them out.
Okay, my tickling, my fancy, it also fits our themes of independence. In this episode, I want to talk about a CD audio or book on CD called Rather Outspoken, My Life in the News by Dan Rather, read by Dan Rather. And first off, I just like to say I wish I had this book while I was going on a trip. It's made my commute back and forth to work really great. It's a no-holds-barred look at the news from the Kennedy assassination, Vietnam, Watergate, 9/11. And the book throws you right into it as he talks about President Bush's war record. The book documents what CBS was and how sad it has become. Rather discusses that he's an independent journalist and he's, he doesn't care what party you're affiliated with. He's just going after the news. Once again, Rather Outspoken by Dan Rather.
Keeping along this independent vein, I wanted to give a shout out to stand-up comedian Billy Wayne Davis. I got to tell you, I've never heard of stand-up before. But recently, he was featured on Mark Maron's WTF podcast, which I think we've talked about before on here, which he does these really long, in-depth interviews with comedians and actors and musicians. And the thing about Billy Wayne Davis is he is a comedian that started here in Nashville. He actually started his career as a DJ at Volunteer State. And then he broke up into stand-up by kind of living at Zany's. And if you've ever listened to Mark's Maron's WTF podcast, he really gets into depth about what was your childhood like? What is your career? So Davis has a lot to say about what it's like to try to force yourself to be a stand-up comedian in Nashville and the scene and what it's like to hang out at Zany's and meet people. It's a really good moment, too, that I know that some people here will appreciate. He's like, yeah, I was at Volunteer State, and then I transferred to Western Kentucky, and Maron had no idea what Western Kentucky was. Like, he didn't know. He met Western Kentucky University, and he asked him a really good question, too. He's like, so I don't know anything about this part of the country, so, like, if you move from, like, Tennessee to Kentucky, is that a different vibe? Is that different? And it's funny. Dave's like, yeah, man, it's different. Yeah. It's different. He's like, what? Well, how's it different? He's like, there's more old money in Kentucky. So anyway, just check it out. I thought it was a great interview. There's a lot of Nashville details, and mostly Maron's interviews are really great anyway. So a Nashville son for almost 2 hours on Maron. Billy Wayne Davis, check it out.
Right on.
So Crystal, what's happening?
Tickling my fancy right now is the fact that the Killer Thrillers Book Club is turning one in July. It's been a great year of reading mysteries and thrillers, both classic and new, and fellow podcaster Mike can also attest to the fact that we've had some great discussions. So I want to extend the invite again. It's the first Thursday of every month at high noon, and we will be meeting in the brand new third floor program room starting in August. Come on down if you haven't read the book. We'll try to stay spoiler free. There will be cupcakes for our birthday discussion.
I was going to ask if you were
cupcakes.
Having to
on
wow.
Thursday, July 3rd. So yeah, check us out, Killer Thrillers.
And in the past, you have actually read one of the books that Bill talked about on this very episode.
Indeed. We read Red Harvest last November.
Good times are had by all. And it's pretty neat trying new things, since I'm still kind of a novice with the mystery genre. It's pretty neat. Like, I never read a legal thriller before. I guess I'll try this,
Yeah.
Sure, I'll read this Lincoln Lawyer. It's popular, so it must not be good. And then I read it, and it is good.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Crystal knew.
Apparently, Crystal knew. Go figure. I was going to talk about The Tale of the Dueling Neurosurgeons by Sam Keen. Back a couple of weeks ago, we talked about science stuff. We got this book, and I was like, oh, yeah, I read a book on neuroscience ages ago. And then I looked it up, and that's why I talked about phantoms in the brain. But it finally came in. I haven't finished it yet, so they haven't actually gotten to any duels, which is kind of a bummer. But basically, it's a similar kind of deal where it talks about neuroscience through weird anecdotes about people who have brain injuries and how they, relate
Start
to the world.
Podcasts. I'm sorry.
Right.
As they relate to the world.
Yeah. So, like, there's a this guy attached to cameras to a blind person's tongue, which allowed them to see shapes. Like, he could throw a ball at them and they could catch it. But they could, you couldn't see, like, details. But still, it's like, you know, they can kind of see.
Brain hack.
Literally. There's a woman who had, they had a tale about a woman who lost the sense of, like, she couldn't fear. So, like, somebody tried to, like, mug her. And she's like, what are you doing? Go away. And the guy was like, what? You know, like,
can I have that done?
Somebody put, like, a poison snake near her. And instead of, like, recoiling, she's like, she wanted to touch it.
I thought that's what psychopaths were.
Like, I was going to say.
No, there's a difference between, yeah.
Because it was even farther out than where they're at.
Yeah, that
I don't know anything about that.
Oh, man. Fred's giving me the death stare.
You didn't scare me.
What happened? And, the only bit that sounds like kind of dueling, I thought this was kind of neat. Like, this is back to French history. So, like, everything's tied into stuff I've said before. Yeah. Henri II of France, who got bonked in the head during a joust with a lance. And he suffered what we would call now a concussion. But back in those days, you know, there wasn't any, like, obvious fractures or bleeding. So they were kind of confused as to what's going on while he's all, like, you know,
can just barely. Just keep jousting. You'll be all right.
He's yeah. He's French. Perfectly. How can you tell?
They kept giving him snails and he kept refusing them. Why would I want to eat snails?
No, snails are gross.
Something's wrong. And two surgeons came in and they basically, they didn't duel. And from what I saw, they didn't actually disagree much. So it wasn't like the sexiest duel. But one was like a battlefield medic who became the king's doctor. And the other guy was Andreas Vesalius, who was a personal physician to Emperor Charles V, who's a pretty interesting dude. Like, he actually did autopsies when it wasn't back in medieval times. They said that nobody was allowed to cut anybody else. So even if you needed surgery, couldn't do it. Thanks to the Pope.
Before we leave today, we have some corrections. The musical director for the Nashville Symphony Orchestra is Giancarlo Guerrero. And his first name, I think I just chopped it in the last episode.
You did. I wasn't going to point it out, but you did.
I just said it wrong? Yeah.
So, like, I just thought you pronounced it wrong.
Nah, me, okay. I'm just the word. Me and Bill, we like to say things wrong often on the podcast.
And I've got one coming up.
Or you said it already because this is the end.
That's true. You're
time warp.
Whoa! Let's do that again.
And Mike, what was the other correction?
Apparently Luc Besson is the writer of District B-13 and not the director.
And who was the director?
Some dude.
Pierre Morel.
Pierre Morel, who for a while had the rights to Dune for a few months.
A few months.
Didn't everybody have the rights to Dune for a few months at some point?
Sure, seen that.
They kind of pass it around
for a few in the late 70s, early 80s, it was passed around a little. In the contemporary world, the director that was associated with it, and they even were doing like pre-production, was Peter Berg, and he decided to do Battleship instead.
Well, yeah, I think we dodged a bullet there.
Exactly. So the team was going to be like Pierre Morel and probably Luc Besson too, and like that could have been pretty cool, right? Yeah, but it was only like they had like this real short window where they had to like commit and start production, or they lost their rights, and it was just like same whole shit, like no money, right? So they had to let their rights go. So now it goes back to the studio or Herbert's estate or something. So the Dune curse continues.
Yeah.
And that's why you made a mistake, I'm sure. It has to do with the Dune curse.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But you have been listening to
the Pop Magic Podcast.
For more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
Because we're an organization. Our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
And no matter where you listen, leave a comment, rate us high. We're needy. We need your love.
5 hearts, please.
Or stars.
Or just send money.
To my PayPal account. We'll be right back. I never saw chicken bones until I moved to Nashville, like on the ground. That was never a thing. And now that I'm here, I see them all the time.
Yeah.
And I wonder, is this
because we're hot chickens, so people have all this chicken that they eat.
Well, I wonder, is this a southern thing that I don't know about? I don't get it.
Maybe it's a Tennessee thing.
Yeah, I don't think it's, I'm from Georgia. We didn't do that.
We never threw chicken bones.
So is it like,
yeah, peach pits on the ground.
Are people eating more chicken wings, or is it the throwing it on the ground thing? And what I never get either, there's always like one.
Yeah.
So that means like you have...
You're like eating along and then you just throw it.
Yeah. So that means you're like walking down the street with, I assume, are multiple chicken wings, because normally that's how they come if you order them, and you get one done, and then you just throw it off into the... onto the sidewalk.
And keep trucking.
And then keep trucking. That's fascinating to me. Like,
read some sort of sociological text on.
I was so fascinated by this. I was actually going to start taking pictures and like start a Tumblr. Because I'm like, it seemed bizarre that there were so many.